WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Neil Diamond has just accomplished something he'd never done in his nearly half-century-long music career. He's landed an album at the top of the Billboard charts. His new number one CD, Home Before Dark, got a huge boost from his recent appearances on American Idol, making him the oldest chart topper in U.S. album history, nudging aside Bob Dylan. It didn't hurt that Neil Diamond's producer is Rick Rubin, who did all those fabulous final recordings with Johnny Cash. Here's a sample from Diamond's Home Before Dark, a song called Don't Go There.
She wants to take it just a little bit further now. Don't let it happen, 'cause if you let her in, she's gonna take it away, making you pay. And what are you gonna say? You better beware and don't go there. Don't wanna let her play with what belongs to you, 'cause if you let her play with you, know what, you know what she's gonna do. She's gonna take it from you. That's just what she's gonna do. I don't know where, and don't go there. A voice is sitting on my shoulder.
Neil Diamond started writing songs in the early 1960s and wrote a number one hit for the Monkees, I'm a Believer. But it was Diamond himself who made most of his own songs famous. Songs like Solitary Man, Cherry Cherry, Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon, Kentucky Woman, and Sweet Caroline. As many of his contemporaries fell off the charts, Diamond moved from teen pop to adult pop. He recorded a duet with Barbara Streisand, had hits from his remake of The Jazz Singer, and dressed in spangles for his sold-out Vegas concerts. In 2005, he reversed course and went intentionally non-glitzy, working with Rick Rubin for the first time on an album called 12 Songs. That's when Terry Gross spoke with Neil Diamond and asked him about his early songwriting days.
I think it's fair to say your first big break, correct me if I'm wrong, was when you had recorded a demo, and the songwriters Ellie Greenwich and Jeff Barry heard the demo and they really liked you. And they, some of their songs are Do Run Run, Chapel of Love,
Be My Baby.
Be My Baby, yeah. So how did they hear you?
I was making a demo. Usually when you sold a song to a publisher, they would allow you to go in and make your own demo, which was an invaluable experience to me. But I went and made the demo and hired Ellie as a backup singer, which she did, despite the fact that she was having huge hits. She liked to sing in the studios with the other girls, and so I hired her for this session, and she liked something about what I was doing, my writing or my singing, and she brought me to her husband, Jeff, and he liked something about what I was doing. I don't know if he liked the writing or the singing, but one liked one, and the other one liked the other. So we started a working relationship. We were both working for the same music publisher, and I kind of got let go by that music publisher, and I asked Jeff and Ellie if they were interested in producing me.
In the first session that you did with them, you recorded Solitary Man. Did you like the idea of horns on this?
I like the idea of anything on those records. I was just thrilled to be there.
Well, let's hear Solitary Man, which I have to say, I think it's really a terrific recording.
Thank you.
Yeah, so, okay, let's hear it. This is your first hit, yes?
Yes,
you recorded yourself. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is Neil Diamond, Solitary Man.
The Linda was mine till the time that I found her, holding Jim, loving him. Then Sue came along, loved me strong, that's what I thought, me and Sue.
die too. Don't know that I will, but until I can find me a girl to stay and won't play games behind me, but I'll be what I am, a solitary man, solitary man. I've had a
Neil Diamond. Now, did you write this song for yourself or for somebody else?
No, I wrote this for myself. I had a contract with Jeff and Ellie, and I started to focus in on just what I wanted to do. And so Solitary Man was written for me and for the first sessions that I was to do with Jeff and Ellie.
When you were working as a songwriter for publishers, writing for other people, were you writing for specific people? Were you writing with specific singers in mind?
Well, that's usually how it went back then, although I was never a good enough writer to kind of write for some other singer to understand what they did best, the keys, the kind of song. Usually you were told that so-and-so is coming up for a session in 3 weeks and they need a song of this type. And it was usually as close as possible to the song that they had previously, which was a hit, if it was a hit. And you had to write a kind of like a copy of that in a way, because that's the way it worked in those days. You have a hit record, and your next record should sound as much like the hit record as you can make it. But I wasn't very good at it. That's probably why I spent 8 years down there in Timpan Alley and had very little success.
Now, the Monkees did a couple of your songs, I'm a Believer and A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You. Did you write those with them in mind or for yourself? I'm trying to think of what the chronology was. Like, you start recording in, what, like 67?
66.
66, okay. And what year are the Monkees? Like, is that after that?
I think 67, something like that. I had recorded a couple of songs, including Solitary Man and Jerry Jerry, which was a big hit. And because of that hit, the people who were producing the Monkees called and said, we like Cherry Cherry. Do you have any other songs? I said, well, I don't have anything like Cherry Cherry, but I have an album coming out soon, and I'll send it over and take your pick.
My guest is Neil Diamond. Here's his version of I'm a Believer.
Someone else, but not for me. Love was out to get me. That's the way it seems. Disappointing, haunted all my dreams. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace. Doubt my mind. I'm in love. I'm a believer, I couldn't leave her if I tried.
I want to ask you about another song that you wrote and recorded, a big hit for you, Sweet Caroline, which is now played at Red Sox games at Fenway Park, and maybe you know the story of why of why that is. But let's start with the song itself. Is there a story behind the writing of the song?
Yeah, I think so. I was heading down to Memphis for my first recording session down there. There were some producers I wanted to work with, and I only had two songs written. And in those days, a session was 3 hours, and you usually had three songs that you recorded. So the night before the session at some motel in Memphis, I knocked out this song, Sweet Caroline. It was one of the fastest songs I've ever written. And we recorded it the next day, and it became one of my biggest songs, if not the biggest song. But songs usually don't come like that. There's usually a lot of work and teeth gnashing and agony and torment over any of these songs. But that one just popped out, and there it was, and here it is now. Still, people can sing it.
It's also sung a lot in bars.
Well, the fact is that it's fun and easy to sing with. And I think that that's the bottom line as far as that song is concerned. It's easy to sing. It's fun. People like to sing it. And that's why it's popular in bars, because anybody can sing it, no matter how many drinks you've had.
Where it began, I can't begin to knowin', but then I know it's growing strong. Wasn't the spring, and spring became the summer. Who'd have believed you'd come along? Hands, touching hands, reaching out, touching me, touching you.
One of the things you've done is, you know, you start in the movie, the jazz singer, and it was a kind of updated, new interpretation of the Al Jolson movie,
right?
And in this movie, you're a rock singer, but your father's a cantor, and he wants you to lead the more traditional life and to sing the more traditional material, and you're of course doing neither, and he acts as if he's in mourning, and he's completely lost his son. And of course, you wrote all the songs for it too. Now, in your father wasn't a cantor, but he did,
no,
from what I understand, listen to a lot of Yiddish recordings. Did he listen to cantorial records as well?
No, never any cantorial music. He listened to he did lip sync for charities around Brooklyn, and he listened to operatic records, including Yiddish records, and he did lip sync and mime to those records. But there was always music playing in his shop. The radio was always on, so I became pretty familiar with all the top 40 records. They danced. My parents were very big ballroom dancers, so that music was around. They got into Latin music for a while, so that music was around, and I learned to dance that way. A lot of it ran off from my parents to me until I was able to start my own little thing. I bumped into folk music when I was about 15, that made me want to get a guitar, and so at the beginning I played only folk music, the folk music that you play at camp around the fireplace, and it developed from there.
Neil Diamond, speaking to Terry Gross in 2005. His new CD, Home Before Dark, is the first album of his career to reach number one on the charts.